From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Here comes Bricks and Mortar, and he rushes up on the outside of United, who digs in. These two down to the wire. Bricks and Mortar, he's built like a champion.
And Beau Recall in the center of the course. Mirth by 2.5. Beau Recall on the outside of Elysia's World, but they're only battling for second as Mirth makes every pole a winning one in the Rodeo Drive.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington Studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Vino Rosso has taken the lead, and it's a vintage performance by Vino Rosso in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Furlong left to run in the Oaks. It's Chauncey and the hometown favorite Late Night Powwow running her down. Chauncey and Late Night Powwow slug it out. Here's Late Night Powwow alongside of Chauncey. Noses up and down. Late Night Powwow wins it for West Virginia.
Now here's Mike Penna.
A vintage performance by Vino Rosso in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Great call by Larry Colmus. Certainly was a vintage performance. A vintage Breeders' Cup as well. Welcome, everyone. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, here on the show that launched this great network. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence. Happy to have you with me as we count down to the first Saturday in May. Yeah, you have to have something to talk about now that the Breeders' Cup is finished, and it's never too early to start talking Kentucky Derby. 175 days, 7 hours, 48 minutes, and 16 seconds until the Run for the Roses. Going to be joined by Ed DeRosa from Twin Spires and Briss coming up at 8:35 Eastern to preview the Winter Book odds for the Derby hopefuls. He's also going to share his thoughts on horses that you'll want to keep an eye on over the next 6 months or so as we make our way toward that first Saturday in May. And that two-year-old picture just kind of thrown into disarray after the Breeders' Cup Juvenile and the huge upset by Storm the Court, defeating Anador, who I'm not sure a lot of people saw that one coming either. But Dennis's moment goes to his knees at the start, loses all chance at that point. Thankfully, from reports that we've read from Dale Romans, he's going to be okay. He'll live to fight another day. But unfortunately, it wasn't going to be for him in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. 8 rings for Bob Baffert, just coming up a bit empty. And it opened the door for a couple of long shots to run 1-2. So where does that leave us with this Kentucky Derby picture? There are other horses out there that will merit consideration. But I can tell you that Storm the Court is not going to be the Winter Book favorite. People are going to look at that as a fluke, considering the fact that Dennis's Moment, the favorite in the Juvenile, stumbled at the start. But we'll talk to Ed coming up about all of the juvenile and soon-to-be 3-year-old news at 8:35 Eastern time. Also going to spend the majority of this show looking back on the 2019 Breeders' Cup and going to do it with an all-star lineup. I'm going to kick it off at 8:15 after our first commercial break here. Going to kick it off with trainer Ignacio Correas, goes by Nacho. He's going to look back on his first Breeders' Cup victory, and it was a big one. Blue Prize defeating Midnight Bisou in the Breeders' Cup Distaff, and likely spoiling any chance that Midnight Bisou would have to be Horse of the Year. I don't think there's any doubt. Well, let's put it this way. I think Blue Prize now can stake a little bit of a claim to the champion older filly and mare. But I still think it's going to be Midnight Bisou. When you look at her entire body of work, it's probably going to be Midnight Bisou as the champion, older filly and mare. But Blue Prize certainly made it interesting, and Ignacio Correas will look back on what was a very special victory for him. Owner Vinny Viola is going to be with me at 9 o'clock Eastern time. He races under the name St. Elias Stable, who campaigned Kentucky Derby winner Always Dreaming with other partners. He and Mike Rapoli campaigned the Classic winner Vino Rosso. What a ride it's been for Vinny Viola. He's going to join me 9 o'clock Eastern time. Trainer Chad Brown is going to be with me right around 9:20. What did Chad do? Well, all he did was saddle three Breeders' Cup winners, including the horse that is now the front runner for Horse of the Year. That's Bricks and Mortar. In those three wins, how about this? And it seems strange to say when you talk about Chad Brown with all of his success and everything he's accomplished, but in those three Breeders' Cup wins, Chad did something he's never done before. He continues to make history. And I'll tell you about that 9:20 Eastern when Chad joins me. Trainer Graham Motion going to be with me as well. He'll wrap it up at 9:40 Eastern as we wind down the program. But what a way to end it with Graham Motion. Sent out Juvenile Fillies Turf winner, sharing a daughter of his 2010 Filly and Mare Turf winner, shared account. It's a great story. And you know, the other thing I want to talk to Graham about, he sent out a post on Twitter after the Breeders' Cup was completed talking about the new protocols, safety protocols, that are in place now at Santa Anita and all of the precautions that were taken to make sure that all of the horses and the humans were safe over the course of those two championship days. And it's sad what happened to Mongolian Groom in the Breeders' Cup Classic. There's no denying that. Nobody is happy about that in any way. But we were 16 seconds away from getting through the Breeders' Cup with no injuries. And it's sad that it happened, but Graham pointed out that the safety measures, the protocols, the things that the tremendous amount of scrutiny that every starter is now under at Santa Anita is working, and that it's good. Now, some horsemen whose horses were scratched out of the Breeders' Cup by the veterinarians might not agree, but when they take a step back and look at it from the safety perspective, they will agree. And they'll say, okay, I think the frustration comes in that, hey, we were this close. We came this far. But it doesn't matter. When it comes to the safety of the horse, it doesn't matter how far you've come, how much money you put in, how close you are to getting into the starting gate of a big race, whether it's the Breeders' Cup or another big race, a Triple Crown race, what, any race. A maiden race. It doesn't matter. If your horse is not 110% fit, healthy, sound, ready to go, you're not going to be able to run. And I don't think that's a bad thing. And I think that was a message sent loud and clear by the folks at Breeders' Cup and by the folks at Santa Anita. And Graham sent out that tweet talking about those safety measures and how, in his opinion, it was working. And I'm going to talk to Graham at 9:40 Eastern. That's one of the things I'll talk to him about. He was on the front lines. He saw it firsthand. The way that the veterinarians were going over those horses all week long, and the number of veterinarians that were looking at those horses all week long. Tip your hat. Tip your hat. There were veterinarians all over Santa Anita looking at the horses constantly. Yeah, whatever it is, it's working. How about this poll question for this morning? Which horse provided the signature performance of this year's Breeders' Cup? Every year, it seems like there's a horse that kind of steals the show. And I'm going to give you some choices here. These are the choices that I feel are probably the most compelling performances. You may feel otherwise, and that's why the last category is going to be other, and you can weigh in and specify which performance you think was best. But which horse provided the signature performance of this year's Breeders' Cup? Vino Rosso? Bricks and Mortar? Mitoli? Yeah, that was a good effort in the Breeders' Cup sprint, huh? And then other. And if you choose the other category, please let me know which one, which horse you feel, outside of those other three, provided us with the signature performance of this year's Breeders' Cup. The performance that we're never going to forget when we think about the 2009 running of the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Vino Rosso, Bricks and Mortar, Mitoli, and other. Go to at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. to cast your vote and let us know. And we'll try to pass those along later in the program if I get time. But it's a busy morning, as you heard me say. A lot to get to. Several special guests. It begins with trainer Ignacio Correas looking back on that win in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. That's next, right here on the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust KeepSafe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about KeepSafe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
The National HBPA is a coalition of over 30 individual affiliates in the United States and Canada, comprised of thousands of thoroughbred owners, trainers, and breeders, committed to the positive future of thoroughbred racing while working to increase its popularity and uphold the highest standards of welfare and integrity. Stop by to visit CEO Eric Hamelback at the National HBPA headquarters in Lexington, Kentucky, and see what the HBPA is doing for you.
Mark your calendar for the Holiday Racing Festival at Penn National on Wednesday, November 27th. The card features three outstanding stakes races, the $200,000 Fabulous Strike Stakes, the $100,000 Swatara Stakes, and the $100,000 Blue Mountain Futurity. Plus, there's a special $3,500 holiday cash giveaway. First post is 6 p.m. Eastern, with the stakes included in the early pick four, comprised of races 1 through 4. Go to hcpn.com for details and rules.
Get ready for the Thanksgiving holiday with a racing feast Wednesday, November 27th, featuring the $1 million Land of Enchantment Day at Zia Park with seven stake races, headlined by the $250,000 Zia Park Derby and the $250,000 Zia Park Oaks. And remember to catch HRRN's special coverage of the Land of Enchantment Day Stakes live at 3 o'clock Eastern, November 27th on Sirius 219 and XM 201. For more information, go to ziaparkcasino.com.
Introducing new to Spendthrift's Share the Upside program for 2020. Cold Front.
Cold Front does it again, wiring the field in the Amsterdam.
The world-class miler retires with more than $1.8 million in earnings and owns a rare five graded stakes wins at five different distances and racetracks.
Cold Front wins it for the U.S.
Now available for inspection and offered for a limited time on the Share the Upside program. Cold Front. Mine your mare's potential at Spendthrift Farm. The Breeders' Farm.
Hi, this is Shug McGahee, and I really enjoy listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Serengeti up is the leader. Ollie's Candy a length and a half behind. Blue Prize is coming three wide. Mochi Cal cuts the corner. Midnight Bizu, fifth at the top of the stretch. And here she comes on the far outside. Serengeti up is to the eighth pole. Blue Prize, here's Midnight Bizu. Blue Prize strikes the front. Midnight Bizu is closing on the outside. Blue Prize has it though, close to home. And it's going to be Blue Prize and John Bravo to win the Breeders' Cup Distaff, upsetting Midnight Bizu today. Serengeti up is for third. Ollie's Candy fourth.
Blue Prize with a powerful victory at the foothills of the San Gabriel Mountains last Saturday, and did it defeating Midnight Bizu, the heavy favorite in the Breeders' Cup Distaff, turning the tables on her rival from a year ago. And Blue Prize, the Argentinian bred, trained by our good friend Ignacio Correas, prefers the name Nacho, so let's go with that. Nacho Correas, and a huge win for him. Nacho, he's with me now. Are you still on cloud nine, my friend?
No, I just get back to the ground. It took me a week, but it was good.
How special was that moment? Wow, how great was that?
was very special. It's, you know, it's like you think that you have the right horse for the ride for that race, but then you have to, you know, she have to prove it, and, you know, it's very... It's very nice when that happens. You know, not easy to make that happen, you know, especially against those, you know, the rivals that she faced. So, very, very happy.
Put me there with you at Santa Anita, Ignacio. And let's start with walking into the paddock before the race. You've done this a million times. You've been in the paddock for big races. But coming into a race like this, you have to feel like you've got the right horse. Put me there with you walking in, and then take me through the race watching it.
Well, I mean, I was pretty relaxed, believe it or not, you know, in the paddock. She was behaving great. I mean, she have done everything right the whole week. And through the race, I got a little bit worried. I think that she broke a step slow. And so we were for like, probably 100 yards dead last, and then she catch up a little bit, and she got behind Midnight Visu. And but I think that I start to... I was watching the race with a friend, and I was kind of worried until they get into the backstretch, and I think that she put herself, you know, behind Midnight Visu, but like, let's say, like, I think that she was 6-7 lengths of the lead, and she was in a great position, and I told my friend, well, now it's on her. You know, there's nothing else that he have done. You know, Joe have done everything right. Now, if he waits and he does, you know, it's going to be from the 3/8 who have the best horse. So after that, I watched the race, you know, not the, it was, I don't know if it's easy, but I was more relaxed because I saw that the filly was in a good spot. So, you know, then you win or you get beat, but at least you know that you are in the right position at the right time. So, and then when she make that move and she took the lead, and I saw that Bisu wasn't, you know, getting closer. I mean, it was incredible.
Well, as you know, we were handling the radio coverage of the races here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And after the race, Kurt Becker and I were talking about the performance by Blue Prize, but the ride by Joe Bravo. And it was a very much a veteran ride. And he really gave her the perfect trip and got first run on Midnight Bisu, because you knew she was going to be putting her run in. You knew she was going to come. And he got first jump on her, and that was all it took. That was really the key to victory, in my opinion. Do you agree?
No, I don't know if it was the key of the victory. I think that our plan was to make the move in the 3/8 and go.
Okay.
If they come with us, they come with us. If not, I mean, Joe was put the field on a great spot, and I think that he rode Blue Prize. He didn't run right against Midnight Visu. He rode his race, and that was great. I mean, it was probably a better trip for us than for Midnight Visu. I don't know. It's not, we can only ride our horse. And that's what he did. I told him, forget about the other horses. You ride your horse. If we win, we win. If we lose, it's on me. But I want you to wait and make a move on the 3/8 and go. And that's what he did. And I think that was great. I mean, it was, we get, if we get a, you know, like you say, a jump on her, I mean, that wasn't the intention. We stick to our plan, and, you know, it went well.
Yeah, it went,
you know,
perfectly.
We got lucky. So, but I think that the difference between this year and last year was that last year we put her on a spot that I don't think that was the best spot, you know, closer to the pace. And we went after Monomoy Girl because nobody, I mean, she was galloping on the lead. And that cost us probably the second place, you know. So, I mean, we got beat. We were the first ones. that went after Mono Miguel. And, you know, the first one always, you know, against good horses, the first one always bounce, you know, not going to pass him.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, even like that, she got beat a length and a half. I think that was a great performance. I mean, you know, we are talking about all, you know, great horses. You know, Wokat, Mitnevisu, Melate, I don't know, Kerr. But, I mean, I think that this performance, what it has is that, I mean, the last 60 days she got beat, you know, Elate, and then she beat Midnight Bisou and Dunbar Road, that is probably the champion three-year-old filly. So I don't know how much more you need to ask for the horse.
Yeah, you know, she had a very similar pattern coming into the Breeders' Cup this year as she did last year. She won the Spinster last year, and then, as you just mentioned, ended up finishing right behind Midnight Bisou a year ago. Did you change anything up, Ignacio, or do anything differently from the Spinster to the Breeders' Cup this year as opposed to last year?
No. I mean, the only big change was that the Spinster of last year, she was like 5 or 6 off the pace, and she won. The Spinster of this year, she was dead last, and she won. And the Breeders' Cup, instead of being, you know, on the heat of the pace, she was 5, 6, 7 lengths of the pace. So I think that the thing that we watched the races and we knew that the only way that we have to beat this kind of fillies is coming with a run in the last 3/8 and not going with them all the way around. So we went to that, back to that, that if you see when she won the Fall City last year, the year before, I mean, she did that. She came from off the pace, and all her good races were coming from a little bit off the pace. So we went back to that.
Talking with
it
trainer.
It was the adjustment that we did.
Yeah.
I don't think that we changed much her training.
Talking with trainer Ignacio Correas here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the trainer of Blue Prize, who went on to win the Breeders' Cup Distaff last Saturday at Santa Anita. Ignacio, this past Tuesday night at Fasig Tipton, she tops that sale, selling for $5 million. Watching her go through the ring after everything that the two of you have been through together, what was that like for you?
Well, it made me proud. For one thing, you know, the price that they paid for her. And it was bittersweet because, it's, you know, you don't get to spend 3 years with many horses in your life. You know, usually thoroughbreds, you know, they're, you know, they go to 5, 5.5. She's 6 years old. She has spent 3 and something years with us. So it's like, I don't know. She's dearly means. I mean, we still have her stall empty there. And I walk through the barn and you look in the stall every morning. But the difference is she's not there.
Yeah.
But I know that she have a great home. She's going to be, well, you know, they're going to take very good care, and that's what is important, you know. It's like, and hopefully she's a great mama, you know, and she produces horses like her for her new owner.
You know, Ignacio, when you look at your page on Equibase and you look at all the statistics and the greatest stakes wins, they list them all, but now it says Breeders' Cup Distaff winner, and it has Blue Prize's name next to it under your resume. For a trainer to win a race like this, you've had other big wins, but to win a race like this, what's it do for you and for your career moving forward?
I don't know. We'll see.
What do you hope it does?
Well, it hopes that, you know, I hope that I can still doing it, you know. That's what you hope, still getting, you know, good horses and, you know, try to still be in the big races or in the big races that those horses allowed you to go. But I don't really know how it's going to be. I mean, maybe it's a little easier to get those horses. I hope so. And you know, I don't know if I ever gonna have a mare like her again. But I mean, I was very lucky to have one, so I have no complaints. If I never have another one, at least I had her.
Yeah, very well said. Nacho Correas here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'll tell you one other thing before I let you go, Ignacio. I sent a congratulatory note to Joe Bravo after the race, and Joe sent back, and the one thing he told me was, Blue Prize is a beast, and I'm sure you can agree with that.
Oh, yeah, she is a beast. And he's a beast that she gets along. He is a beast too. I mean, he always rides with such a heart that is very hard. He's a hard trying, you know, son of a gun, Joe. He always tries, and that's what I like the most about him. And I'm very happy that we both get that monkey of the park together.
Yeah, so,
we don't have to. We already did it, so might be easy to get it done a second time. And I'm very happy for him. Very, very, very happy. I think that he deserves it, you know, more than anyone.
Well, Ignacio, I'm happy for you too, my friend. Thank you for spending a little time with me this morning. I thought it only fitting that we make you our industry star of the week here on this Saturday morning. This segment is presented by Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. But he sponsors this segment every week, and I couldn't think of anybody more fitting than Ignacio Correas to be our industry star of the week. So congratulations on that. Congratulations on the win in the distaff, and all the best moving forward. I'm looking forward to seeing the next Blue Prize.
Okay, me too. Thank you very much, Mike. It was a pleasure to be with you guys.
All right, you too, buddy. Ignacio Correas here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And, yeah, this segment presented by Stuart Morris. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. His success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. Visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the major sales. I love that Ignacio said that it was great for he and Joe Bravo to get the monkey off their back together. Remember, Ignacio had never won a Breeders' Cup race. Joe Bravo hadn't either. More than 5,000 career victories. He had never won the Breeders' Cup until last Saturday with Blue Prize. And that's, you look at Joe Bravo, you look at Ignacio Correas, if you couldn't tell from listening to him for the past 12 minutes or so, one of the classiest guys that you're going to find in the sport. So passionate about this game. And you could hear him get emotional talking about leaving Blue Prize's stall empty and coming to the barn the next day. She's not there. She's not there. She sold at Fasig Tipton. She has a new home selling for $5 million as part of that Knight of Stars program. Wow. Great story. And that truly is what this game is all about, and that's why I wanted to honor Ignacio with our Industry Star of the Week here on this Saturday morning. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, Ignacio will receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. When I come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the Breeders' Cup, but we'll do it from the juvenile perspective, and we'll begin to look ahead to the first Saturday in May. I'll do it with Ed DeRosa from Briss and Twin Spires. That's right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf that is brought to you every Saturday morning at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington on the corner of New Circle and Liberty here in Lexington, Kentucky. I tell you every week, I've been telling you for about 15 years on the show now, that you go there, you see the Godfather, Tony Ottiano, and all of the amazing people. They are horse people. They want to be the dealership of the equine industry in Central Kentucky. And if you're in the market for a new or pre-owned vehicle, the Lexus Store of Lexington is absolutely the place to go. I'm back right after this Lexus Legends of the Turf.
The adage that all good things are worth waiting for was never better illustrated than when Alfred G. Vanderbilt's mare Geisha dropped her one-month overdue foal on March 27, 1950. The newly arrived gray colt was by 1945 Preakness winner Polynesian and most fittingly was bemonikered Native Dancer. In an absolutely brilliant career, he won 20 of 22 races. He was endeared by the American public. They affectionately referred to him as the Dancer or the Gray Ghost. Huge crowd surrounding the paddock when he raced, transfixed by the combination of a majestic bearing, icy calmness that he displayed before his races, and they rushed down to the rail to catch a glimpse of Native Dancer charging down the stretch to victory from way behind, eating up huge chunks of ground with his 29-foot stride. Native Dancer's reputation preceded him in his very first outing in April of his two-year-old season. He was sent postward a 7-5 favorite and sprinted off to a 4.5 length win, breaking his maiden. A bare 4 days later, he came back to roar to victory in the youthful stakes at odds of 4-5. Never in all the rest of his days on the racetrack did he ever go up at odds any higher. He suffered a shin injury in the youthful, but he returned to the races in superb form 4 months later at Saratoga in August. He found himself in the winner's circle in the next 7 races in a row, the highlight of that streak being equaling of the world record for 6.5 furlongs in the running of the Belmont Futurity. Ankle problems delayed his first start in his sophomore season until April at Aqueduct in the Gotham Stakes 2 weeks before the Derby. He won the Gotham by 2 and romped home in the Wood Memorial by 4.5 to thereby establish himself as the overwhelming favorite in the run for the Roses. But that early May day in 1953 was not to be his day, and the chart of that Derby tells the story. Chart caller's comment read like this: Native Dancer, roughed at the first turn by Money Broker, was eased back to secure racing room, raced wide in the run to the upper turn, saved ground entering the stretch and finished strongly, but could not overtake the winner, although probably the best. Unquote. Writer Eric Guerin blamed the roughing at the clubhouse turn for the loss. Others pointed to the suspiciously large ankles of Native Dancer. At any rate, all observers agreed that in one more stride, Dark Star's victory by a head would have been instead another victory for the Dancer. After 3 hard races in 3 weeks, conditioner Bill Winfrey may well have expected to give his spectacular gray charger respite from the racing wars, but the Dancer was shipped to New York, where he won the Withers, and on the very next weekend he was on hand in Baltimore to nail down the Preakness. That was 5 wins in 5 consecutive weekends. Well, he finally got a break before galloping off to score in the Belmont Stakes and followed that with 4 more consecutive wins. Soreness in his left forefoot prevented him from meeting the 4-year-old sensation Tom Fool in the prestigious fall handicaps, and as a result, Tom Fool was named Horse of the Year. Native Dancer continued having physical problems as a 4-year-old, going postward only 3 times, but he did win all 3. He scored in the Metropolitan and Oneonta handicaps, packing 137 pounds in the latter. They were so impressive, he was finally accorded unanimous Horse of the Year honors in 1954. Through his bloodline, Native Dancer was responsible for a raft of outstanding thoroughbreds: Kauai King, Majestic Prince, Raisin Native, Coastal, Affirmed, Exclusive Native, Genuine Risk, Ruffian, and one of the world's all-time influential sires, Northern Dancer. That, my friends, is the story of the Gray Ghost, truly a legend in thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Experience the thrill of pulse-pounding thoroughbred racing at the Maryland Jockey Club at Laurel Park. Step outside to a front-row seat for world-class racing or enjoy the view from towering windows in a gorgeous space. What better way to spend an afternoon than with friends, a craft beer, local cuisine, and a winning ticket? Play it safe on a favorite or take a chance on a long shot. Odds are you'll have a fabulous time. Live racing Friday through Sunday. Post time, 1:10 p.m.
I'm speaking with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, can you explain how the claims process works? Knock on wood, I haven't experienced a claim recently and hope I never will, but what happens?
Well, Mike, after we are notified by the insured of an accident or event, we will submit a claim report to the company, giving basic details of the claim. A claims representative will then contact the insured to walk them through the claim settlement process. Most claims are settled promptly, efficiently, and to the complete satisfaction of the insured.
Well, that sounds fair.
Basically, the insured is buying an insurance policy, which is a promise to pay in the event of a covered claim. It also provides peace of mind, absent of a claim. That's the way it works.
Thanks, Joe. For all your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
Hi, I'm Kieran McLaughlin. I'm so hot at this meet because I listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Storm the Court is the leader. Here's Longshot and O'Dor moving on the outside. Eight Rings is under pressure right behind them. And O'Dor at 25-1 has swept up on the outside and has now grabbed the lead with a furlong to go. Storm the Court tries to battle on. Farther out, it's Wrecking Crew. It's going to be an upset here. Dennis's moment is still last as they come to the final 16. Storm the Court battles on inside of Anno Door. These two long shots will decide the juvenile, and it is Storm the Court who won it. Anno Door was second, Wrecking Crew was third, and then Scabbard in a big upset in the juvenile.
Well, that certainly clears up the Kentucky Derby picture. Storm the Court 93-80 for the victory, defeating long shot Anno Door. And Wrecking Crew, another long shot, rounding out the trifectas in that Breeders' Cup Juvenile last Friday at Santa Anita. Welcome back, Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, joined now by my good friend, the Duke of Degeneracy himself, Mr. Ed DeRosa from Brisnet and Twin Spires. Duke, good morning.
Good morning.
So you got it all figured out now? You got the juvenile picture all together?
I actually appreciate the chaos this time of year because we have that first future wager coming up in a couple weeks, and it's at the point where no matter who you like, I would have to think you're going to get a palatable price, whereas Dennis's Moment won or Eight Rings, obviously the price on them, they become completely unplayable. So if you like them, you get a mulligan and maybe a better price, and if you don't, I don't think anyone's believing what they saw anyway, so you'll still get a good price on the horses who ran well.
So who's going to end up being the favorite in that first future book?
I think it'll be Dennis's Moment, although, Tis the Law, I believe, is slated to run that weekend at Churchill. So if he were to win, I could see a lot of money going to him after the race. So I would say he's a chance. And then Independence Hall ran huge at Aqueduct last weekend. I expect that'll get some attention as well. So the fact that you have a potential for three viable wagering options, hopefully if you like one of them, gives you value on the one you like versus the other two. And if you don't like any of them, whoever you do like is sure to, maybe spice things up. And then you have the sire you can bet as well. So
yeah, that's right, too.
It should actually be interesting for a change.
Yeah, we're 175 days away from the Run for the Roses, and never too early to start talking Derby. And believe it or not, that's about 6 months. It'll be here before we know it.
less than 6 months for sure.
Yeah, it's crazy. Do you typically dive in, when you're betting the future pools, do you dive in kind of heavy on the first one, or do you wait and see how things play out?
For whatever reason, I think the fact that you don't get paid for you know, 5 months if it's the first one, or even a few weeks if it's the last one, tempers my enthusiasm a bit in the sense that I am the Duke of Degeneracy, but, you know, I like the action and I like to get paid. So race to race, day to day, I don't really need too strong of opinion. But if I'm going to tie up my...
No, maybe he's not going to bet. We'll get back to Duke here in just a minute. Looks like we had a little drop of that cell phone there. We'll get back to him here in just a second. But, yeah, interesting. I mean, you have that first future wager coming up. How heavy do you go? Keep in mind that with these future bets, if the horse doesn't run in the Kentucky Derby, you have no chance to win. If the horse bows out next week and comes off the Derby trail, you're out. So there is a risk-reward thing that you have to take into account. Duke, I think we lost you there when you were answering that question about how you will approach that first Derby pool.
Yeah, I need a strong opinion. Now, if I like any horse for whatever reason and he's like 150-1, then maybe, you know, then you take a shot for $2, say you had it, and, you know, collect a windfall on Derby Day. But for the most part, if I'm taking 30 or 40-1 this far out, I really need to have a hook.
Can we say that Storm the Court or even Onador are legitimate contenders, or is that just a fluke?
No, I mean, certainly the winner with 20 Derby points, you have to take seriously, because he just really needs to do anything now as a 3-year-old to get in the gate. I didn't really like him that much, to be honest. The runner-up, I did think, had some chance at upsetting the apple cart. The races at Golden Gate were fine. I mean, they weren't to what Dennis's Moment ran, but I kind of thought he had a look of best of the rest. So if I'm taking anyone, for me, it would likely be him. And I was on another Twist of Fate last year. I thought he was kind of underappreciated. So same connections and see what happens.
What do we make of 8 Rings?
I'm putting him in the scabbard category. I just think, I hate to say run out of chances, especially with a guy like Baffert and Scabbard's case. Eddie Keneally's a great horseman as well, but I just don't see where the excuse is. And now that's 2 races. He dumped the jockey once, and now this. It's short prices. He's going to have to make a believer out of me before I go to that well.
One horse we haven't talked about yet, and that's a horse that was scratched from the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, Maxfield. I think that he could end up being among the favorites, if not the favorite, in that future book. Am I way off base on that?
No, I think you're right. He sort of gets credit by default, too, because of the way the race played out, assuming he had gotten the trip and what we saw him do in the futurity. I have to think he was good enough to win that race as it played out, so... other people are going to think the same. So unfortunately, if you loved him, the price isn't going to be super, but if Dennis's Moment and Tis the Law and Independence Hall take money, that still makes him the fourth choice in a 24-horse bet. So I think there's some interest there. And structure, they're saying, is going to take a whack at the Derby Trail. So I would expect he'll be in among the 23 entrants as well.
What about four-wheel drive?
I would think, given the sire, I guess maybe they have to take a look. Coolmore certainly would love to have a Derby winner from their Triple Crown winner's first crop, but I'm a little dubious. He had the look of a horse who could have went on to the juvenile mile race, and they kept him sprinting. So maybe distance questions, but this is the time of year to dream.
Yeah, it is the time of year to dream. Talking with Ed DeRosa from Brisnet.com and from Twin Spires. Of course, you can catch him every Thursday night here on HRN with our Brisnet.com call-in show. If you want to call in coming up on Thursdays, you can talk some Breeders' Cup or Derby with them. Anthony Stabile is also part of that team with Ed. Duke, let's shift gears for a minute. How about this Horse of the Year debate? Did Bricks and Mortar slam the door shut?
He did for me. I understand the debate. Mattoli had a fantastic year, won some great races. And I hate to put a premium on undefeated because I think too often, for better or worse, I think we saw it with Zenyatta, where her races were targeted to preserve that record. So I don't like to put too much of a premium on it, but the fact is it's hard to never lose, especially when you're running in the races that he ran in. So to me, that Mattioli did lose, and that Bricks and Mortar won what I consider one of the most prestigious races in the world, two of them in the Breeders' Cup Turf and the Arlington Million, tips the scale in his favor enough that it's not much of a debate for me. But I also have no issue and completely understand why people might look toward Mattioli.
Should Vino Rosso be in the discussion after winning three grade ones here in 2019?
I mean, I guess he's in the discussion for me because you have to put three names down, and Midnight Bizou not defeating males makes her a non-factor in my mind. So I guess he's number three, but Bricks and Mortar had the better year. Now, I will say I typically do favor the main track, classic-style races. You know, that's what we breed for. All three of our classic races in the Triple Crown are on dirt. I don't mind saying that dirt has a slight edge if you run the table over the turf stars, but Bricks and Mortar won the right races. He wasn't, you know, cherry-picking some grade twos to add to his resume. He showed up for the biggest races going on at the time, and I feel like that's worthy of the reward.
There were people that were saying, okay, maybe the mile-and-a-half turf isn't the best spot for him. Maybe they should focus on the Breeders' Cup mile instead. But I think Chad Brown knows what he's doing.
Well, considering who he had in the mile and what he did in there, I would say he pushed both the right buttons in that respect, and he's probably on his way to a trainer title. I thought the turf was the right move to silence some doubters. I think with the mile, people would have questioned the distance, and if he would have won the mile, they would have seen that maybe as no different than Mattioli winning the Met Mile. And, you know, are these distance specialists versus just the best horses in training? I think both horses answered the question that, no, they're just the better horses in training, and I think Bricks and Mortar proved himself best by going to the turf. Unfortunately, we didn't see a horse on the level of Enable in there this year. Obviously, that would have helped add to his resume and legacy, but Chad can't enter the competition. He can only enter his horses, and I thought he picked the more ambitious spot and deserves to be rewarded for that.
Yeah, that's a great point. I threw out a poll question this morning on our Twitter, at HRN, and I asked people to weigh in on which horse provided the signature performance of this year's Breeders' Cup. And I gave some choices: Vino Rosso, Bricks and Mortar, Mattioli, and then there's another category for other if you think it's somebody other than those top three. How about for you? Which horse provided that signature performance of the 2019 Breeders' Cup?
I would say for signature, I would go with Bricks and Mortar just because he actually answered a question about the distance, going a mile and a half, and unquestionably became our best turf horse. You know, I as a big fan of Sister Charlie, kind of, you know, thought maybe she was our best. Uni merits some discussion if Bricks and Mortar hadn't won, but he did. So from a signature standpoint, sort of putting his stamp on this year, I answer Bricks and Mortar. But Mattioli, I feel like we already knew he was the best sprinter. So to me, that wasn't so much a signature performance. Is more, I hate to say we expect greatness because greatness shouldn't be expected. But he delivered on something we kind of already knew he was capable of, whereas Bricks and Mortar answered a new question. So strictly signature-wise, I do go with Bricks and Mortar, but Mattioli and Bricks and Mortar, to me, are the two performances we'll remember out of this Breeders' Cup.
I'm assuming that as we get closer to that Kentucky Derby, 175 days, 7 hours, and 57 seconds away, that Twin Spires will be offering several different packages and programs. Briss will have all the information that people need to decipher that picture as we edge closer.
Oh, yeah, and starting really with the first future wager, which also includes the sire wager, and thanks to, you know, Brissonette's Wealth of Pedigree Info, put a lot of good information together for those sires, and just looking forward to sharing with that, and certainly going to, it's a long road, but it goes quickly, and information is a good way to help navigate it.
He's the best. The Duke of Degeneracy himself, Ed DeRosa, Bristnet.com, Twinspires.com is where you can get all that information for the run for the Roses. Duke, appreciate the visit as always, my friend, and we'll look forward to hearing you Thursday night on the Bristnet.com call-in show.
Always, as Anthony says, and I agree, one of our favorite hours of the week. It's a lot of fun to talk to the nation and talk racing.
Yeah, appreciate it, brother. Thanks so much for taking some time.
Thank you.
All right, Ed DeRosa here on HRRN. And yeah, that Thursday night show, if you haven't had a chance to call in and talk racing, they take your calls every Thursday, 6 to 7 Eastern, Sirius 219, XM 201, and streaming worldwide on our website at horseracingradio.net. Make sure you start participating in that program. Interesting thoughts from Ed on an approach to betting these future books. Because as I was talking about when he dropped out there for a second, if you bet the future book and your horse doesn't make it to the starting gate, you're out. So it's a riskier proposition. But because of that, I think you have to be rewarded with a much bigger price than you think you could get on the first Saturday in May if the horse gets that far. I think that's the way to look at it. Are you taking a price that rewards you for the risk that you're taking 6 months out, 5 months out, 4 months out, whatever it is? That's the way you have to look at those future wagers. All right, when I come back, I'll tell you what's ahead for the second half of the program. Very busy show. I'll continue to look back on the 2019 Breeders' Cup. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Power.
Taprit is still there. Master Plan is gaining. Master Plan at Taprit. Taprit still in front. Master Plan too late. Taprit will do it.
Passion.
It's Taprit. He makes another step forward on his way to Churchill. Well done, young man. We'll report home 4 lengths to the good.
Performance.
Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish Warcry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
Gainsway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling turned classic winner and millionaire. Following a precocious stakes-winning 2-year-old campaign, Taprit set a new stakes record in the Grade 2 Tampa Bay Derby before capturing the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes in his 3-year-old season. Among the best bred sons of Taprit ever to enter stud, out of Grade 1 Spinaway Stakes winner and multiple Graded Stakes producer, Appealing Zofie. Taprit, standing for $12,500 at Gainsway.
Power. Passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
But Spun to Run has run away. Herod Ortiz and Spun to Run, the real deal of the Dirt Mile. They won it by 3.5 lengths.
Spun to Run, the 3-year-old son of Darley Stallion Hard Spun, did it again, scoring an ultra-impressive gate-to-wire win in the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. And that victory makes Spun to Run your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Hard Spun is Danzig's last Grade 1 winning son, who sired more first crop stakes winners than any other stallion before him. Spun to Run became Hard Spun's second Grade 1 winner from his current 3-year-old crop. Only Quality Road has more, and only Warfront can match it. Learn more about Hard Spun and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
They're coming to the top of the stretch, and it is McKenzie off the turn in front. Vino Rosso comes up to him as they arrive at the eighth pole. McKenzie digs down. Vino Rosso alongside. These two at the 16th pole. Vino Rosso has taken the lead, and it's a vintage performance by Vino Rosso in the Breeders' Cup Classic. McKenzie was second, Higher Power was third, and Elite was fourth. It was Vino Rosso and Errata Ortiz.
Man, I love that call by Larry Colmus. Vino Rosso, the victory in the Breeders' Cup Classic last Saturday at Santa Anita. Going to talk with Vinny Viola, his owner. Of course, he owns that horse in partnership with Mike Rapoli and his Rapoli stable. We'll talk to him coming up just about 9 o'clock Eastern time. Chad Brown going to join me at 9:20, and Graham Motion coming up at 9:40. So a lot still to get to. Very busy second half of the program. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, you just have to go to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast there at your leisure, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes as well. There is no better way to follow racing, breeding, industry news, and more than with Bloodhorse. There are so many platforms in which they bring it to you. Bloodhorse.com, the Bloodhorse Daily app, Bloodhorse Magazine, all of those, and their social media. They're all part of what has become a tremendous platform for more than 100 years. It has been Bloodhorse. And right now, for a limited time, you can sign up for Bloodhorse Magazine and Tablet, their fall special, which is 12 weekly issues for only $12. Go to bloodhorse.com/fall19. That's bloodhorse.com/fall19 to learn more. You know, I had a chance to stop into Woodford Feed in Versailles yesterday and got talking to Bob Cleveland and the great team that they have there. And they were showing me all of the different steel products that they have. And with winter coming here and, you know, fall winding down, the weather's going to get kind of nasty, especially here in the bluegrass. You want to stop over there and grab your leaf blowers and the chainsaws, everything you need to get ready for winter. Plus, they're an official Carhartt dealer, so you can stop over and stay warm for the winter with all the Carhartt apparel that you're going to need when you're out there working on the farms every single day. One other side note here before I get you to hour number two. Horse Racing Radio Network this past week was honored to be among the finalists that are listed for the Fan Choice Awards in the radio podcast category at America's Best Racing. And you can go to America's Best Racing to learn more about that and to vote for Horse Racing Radio Network. And if you like our programming, then I encourage you to do so. Head over there and cast your vote and let them know you are a member of HRN Nation and that this is your favorite radio show and your favorite podcast, whatever it might be. But you can go there. It's America's Best Racing, and cast your vote. Yeah, I think you have until about the middle of November to get that vote in, but you can vote starting right now. It's americasbestracing.net is where you can find that information. And you're also entered when you do that. You're entered to win a great prize pack. I read something about it very quickly before I came on air, so you can check it all out. It's right there on their website, americasbestracing.net. There are several different categories you can vote for, including that popular Vox Populi Award. All of that is part of the Fan Choice Awards here in 2019, but HRN honored to be part of the great radio shows and podcasts that are listed on there. So head over, cast your vote. We'd love to have your vote for Horse Racing Radio Network as your favorite radio show and podcast at americasbestracing.net. Well, I told you that trainer Chad Brown did something in winning three Breeders' Cup races last week, did something he has never accomplished before. And you just heard Ed DeRosa say he's probably on track for another leading trainer title here in 2019. Chad Brown has dominated horse racing over the past several years, and he continues to do so. But in winning those three Breeders' Cup races, he did something he has never accomplished in his career up until that point. And I'll talk to Chad about that coming up in the second half of the program. Again, he'll be with me at 9:20 Eastern time. But when I come back, owner Vinny Viola from St. Elias Stable will kick off the second half of the program. He'll look back on that huge win by Vino Rosso in the Breeders' Cup Classic, talk about what that moment was like for him. That's all ahead right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is HRRN.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Midnight Fizzo is closing on the outside. Blue Prize has it, though, close to home. And it's going to be Blue Prize and Joe Bravo to win the Breeders' Cup Distaff.
Bowie's Hero from the outside. Diamond Oops, Bowie's Hero. Neck shares to the inside. Bowie's Hero. Bowie's Hero wins the Shadwell Turf Mile.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
McKenzie is all out, but today belongs to Mongolian Groove. It's Mongolian Groove, wire to wire in the Oscar again under Abel Sedil. McKenzie settles for second.
Chancelot at the 16th pole. McCauley runs at him. Chancelot and McCauley. McCauley's a monster. McCauley wins the sprint.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence on this Saturday morning, the ninth day of November 2019, which means we are 1 week removed from the Breeders' Cup World Championships and continuing to edge closer to the first Saturday in May. Yeah, if you think it's too early to count down, forget about that. Love these countdowns, especially the countdown to the first Saturday in May. 175 days, 6 hours, 48 minutes, and now
here's
just
Mike
32
Penna.
Seconds. Yeah, here I am. Here's Mike Penna. That is me, Baron of the Backstretch, in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. Fun first half of the show. It began with trainer Ignacio Correas looking back on his win in the Breeders' Cup Distaff with Blue Prize. I was joined by Ed DeRosa from Bristnet.com and Twinspires.com to talk about that two-year-old picture, those horses will turn three on January 1st and will begin in earnest the road to the Kentucky Derby. So Ed, kind enough to spend some time talking about that. The poll question for this morning, which horse provided the signature performance of this year's Breeders' Cup? Vino Rosso, Bricks and Mortar, Mitoli, and the fourth category is other. If you feel it's somebody other than those top three, you can go there and you can specify if you choose the other category. Which horse provided the signature performance of this year's Breeders' Cup? Go to at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to let us know your thoughts. Well, I have a feeling that my next guest is probably going to take Vino Rosso when it comes down to answering that question. He is owner Vinny Viola, St. Elias Stable. He owns Vino Rosso in partnership with Mike Rapoli and his Rapoli Stable. And Vinny, nice enough to spend a little time with me here this morning on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Vinny, good morning.
It's my pleasure, Mike. Thank you for having me, and thank you for your work for our great sport.
Oh, thank you.
Well done, and greatly appreciated.
Oh, thank you so much. And, you know, Vinny, you were kind enough to spend a few minutes with our Ashley Mayhew in the paddock during our radio broadcast of the Classic this past week. And you talked about how, you know, this sport, this is the dream. You're at the Breeders' Cup. And look, you've reached the top of the mountain in winning the Kentucky Derby with Always Dreaming, so you know a thing about dreams coming true when it comes to thoroughbred racing. But put me there with you at Santa Anita. What was this moment like for you?
Well, I guess it really set the feeling, the experience at that moment in the paddock. You have to go back to the couple of weeks leading up to race time. He had been training so well, and I shared this during our press conference following the race, that I had never received texts from Todd as enthusiastic about any horse that we'd had. So the anticipation, the week before the race, he ships and he really comes off the plane and goes the jet and goes right into his feed bucket. I mean, he's just this indomitable spirit now. And on the track every day, I invariably get texts from four or five, half dozen so are people about how unbelievably healthy and happy and fit he looked. So go to the paddock, and what I'm looking for is the horse, and I can't wait to see him because I didn't go in the morning to see him a couple of days that I was there. I just wanted to see him at the race time. And it was a feeling that you were so honored. I was so honored by just the horse's presence, and to be in any way involved with an athlete of that just ability. I was overwhelmed emotionally, quite frankly, in the paddock. So that's a long way to set up the feeling. It was very emotionally overwhelming. And when he came in that paddock, and he was just a cool customer, and I looked around and I noticed that it was a nice day, you know. I noticed that some of the other horses were a tad fractious, and he just was so disposed and ready to run. So it was a feeling of overwhelming excitement. Sorry for the long answer, Mike, but that's what it was at the paddock.
That was a great answer, Vinny. And I've always said that if we could, as a sport, take that feeling that you get when you're watching your horse cross the finish line first in any race, forget about a Breeders' Cup Classic or a Kentucky Derby, in any race, this would be the easiest sport in the world to market. So when you're asked that question, how do you put into words what it's like watching your horse win a race like the Breeders' Cup Classic?
I try to describe it to people like, and you're right, Mike, it doesn't matter what race or condition or stake it is. When your horse is coming down the stretch and you realize you're going to win, the experience from the moment where you can conclude, I think I'm going to win this, he's going to win this, she's going to win this, so when they cross the wire, you have to think when you were a young person and your favorite team won the World Series. It's that exhilaration and, quite frankly, the awe, the admiration for the feat that you just saw. So there's a reason why last out at the World Series, everybody comes running out of the dugout because they're exhilarated. And they are not even thinking clearly in those moments because they're overwhelmed by a positive feeling of emotion and accomplishment. That's how it is to own a racehorse. When that horse crosses the finish line, you are allowed by the privilege of that horse to be in a mindset or be in a place where you're disconnected from the normal experiences. You're really being dynamically exhilarated. And it's hard to describe it, but anyone I've ever introduced and 1 degree removed, let's say they come to the race and they go to the paddock with us and then they watch the race, there's not a person that hasn't said, I want to be a horse owner, or I can't wait for the next race. I would just say that's the feeling. You feel part. Quite frankly, you feel so connected to that horse. People don't understand the relationship between people in this sport and the horses. This is not a matter of livestock. This is a athlete that is central to that person's responsibility. And we know that because these athletes perform at the highest level and are given the best of everything, from care to feed to... I try to explain it that way. I'll say it in a little bit of a light way, and I'll say it is an out-of-body experience. I could tell you this. When Vino Rosso crossed
the finish line in the Jockey Gold Cup off that magnificent battle with, between him and Code of Honor.
Yeah.
I couldn't feel my body. Walking down to the winner's circle, I couldn't feel my body. It's great. It's a great feeling. Anyway, I always say, I wish everyone, whoever put a $2 bet, a $2 show bet, could experience the feeling of owning a racehorse that you've helped manage, select, any kind of connection besides then stewarding their care. And it's an indescribable feeling. I wish that for everyone.
Vinny, people are going to look at your success and they're going to say, okay, well, the guy burst onto the scene. He wins the Kentucky Derby. He wins the Breeders' Cup Classic. It, you know, he's been competing at the highest levels his whole life. It wasn't always like this for Vinny Viola. You told me the story about getting started in the sport, and you have put your time in and paid your dues. To think about where you started and where you are today, when you do get time to think about that, what things come to mind?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind for me, one is a deep, deep sense of humility and blessings, being blessed and humility. But the strongest thing, emotion or feeling, or is just an unbelievable gratitude for our team. You know, Rory Babbage runs and manages our stable, and that's across the board. As you know, we really are engaged in the breeding side of the business as well as the raising and racing of these horses. I have the greatest partners. I love partnerships. Anthony Bonomo, Mike Rapoli. I said Saturday after the race, Mike Rapoli is the hardest working horse owner in the sport. He just is. He's a blessing to be associated with, because he's thinking all the time about every consideration about the horse. But our team, and it's the folks, the late, great Jimmy Krupe. I think about Jimmy every day or time I'm thinking about our horses, because Jimmy not only was a bloodstock agent, he became quickly like a guide, not only about the horse business, but a guide in life. He was really, truly, he became a mentor to me. And Mike, you know, I have to tell you this. It's really about having the team and establishing the sort of trust and courage so that the team could make mistakes. I usually make them, and they usually almost always clean them up. And having a positive sense that it's for the horse. We put the horse first at all time. And if you get people around you like that, it kind of, you can get lucky. And last thing is, I tend to be an extremely lucky person, and I thank God for that every day. But I think really great people, great partners, great staff. Todd Pletcher, I mean, here's a Hall of Fame trainer who has a beautiful family. His priorities are just magnificently efficient, and he shows up and he executes every day. Also on our staff, we have who I think is probably one of the premier historians, pedigree experts in the business, who's really micro-guided so much of what we've done, is John Sparkman. I can't leave out Terry Finley, because Terry and I aren't partners till today. I mean, we have a beautiful honor code. He guided me when I got back in the business, was involved with Liam's Map with me. So you just think about the people that I've been blessed to have the opportunity to work with. I got to tell you, it's a pretty good feeling right now. Pretty good feeling.
Yeah, I'm so glad. By the way, talking with Vinny Viola, St. Elias Stable, the owners in partnership with Mike Rapoli of Breeders' Cup Classic winner Vino Rosso. And I'm so glad you brought up Todd Pletcher, too, because I was going to mention that. He has not had the typical Todd Pletcher year. We're used to seeing him dominate, and it just hasn't been like that for Todd this year. But he caps it off with this huge win for the entire team. And when I texted him and congratulated him, he sent that back to me. He said, yeah, great win for the whole team. And he always references that team. And I think that's one of the things that makes Todd so special. But Vinny, before I wrap it up here, I've got about 2 minutes left before I have to get to the commercial break. I always wanted to ask you, why St. Elias Stable? Why the name?
Well, my dad was born in Italy, and he was just short of 4 years old when his mom took him and his two brothers. My grandfather had come to America earlier. My dad was born on July 20th. One of the missionary that settled this small village that my dad was born in Italy was a Coptic bishop, a Coptic Catholic bishop, St. Elias. So my father's full name is Giovanni Elias Viola. And my first stable was named after my dad back in 1996. And we did a little claiming. I mean, we owned all of two or three horses. My dad had congestive heart failure, and I wanted to get him silks and get in the game. And we really did two or three horses. My dad died a couple of years later. That was JV Stables. That was his initials. So when we wanted to start up again in 2012, I talked to Teresa, and we thought it would be a nice honor to name the stable after my father's patron saint, St. Elias.
Oh, what a great story. Vinny Viola here on the Horse Racing Radio Network and St. Elias Stable. Now, the owners in partnership of a Breeders' Cup Classic winner, Vino Rosso, going to be heading to stud at Spendthrift Farm. He'll join several other stallions coming into the farm this year to kick off their stallion career. And I know, Vinny, you'll be excited to see his babies when they get to the racetrack in a few years.
We're out here shopping for mares to bring to them as we speak. So that's the great thing about the sport, right? You know, you pick it up again just where you left off. But I think it was a magnificent day for our great sport. 68,000 people, record handle, and the quality of racing on Saturday particularly, you just can't get much better. So,
Vinny, you're all class. You're a great ambassador for the sport. Keep up the great work, and thank you again for taking the time to visit with me here this morning.
God bless you, Mike. Thank you, pal.
All right, you too, buddy. Vinny Viola here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, we're going to send Vinny a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Yeah, you talk about somebody who just loves this game and loves this sport, and now, you know, having the success he's had it for a very long time. You heard him say he's a very lucky person, and he's been blessed to be a very lucky person. Well, not sure he needed a whole lot of luck on Saturday, because Vino Rosso took care of that. Powerful win to take the Breeders' Cup Classic. Going to get to another break. When I come back, I'll welcome in the man who saddled three winners during the Breeders' Cup this year. That is the outstanding super trainer, as I call him, Mr. Chad Brown. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-mesh horse fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Eclipse champion Blame. Ranked among the top stallions of his crop, Blame has sired over 50 stakes horses. His recent top performers include graded stakes winners Blame, Marley's Freedom, Mississippi, Ms. Bad Behavior, and the sensational two-year-old filly Abscond, winner of the Grade 1 Natama Stakes. In the auction ring, his two-year-olds commanded prices up to $700,000. Outstanding value, outstanding results. Blame, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Stallion owners, there is still time to donate. The Iowa Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Stallion Auction is the only auction that the stallion owner can receive up to $15,000 by donating one season. ITBOA has paid out $105,000 so far to stallion owners and farms, such as Adena Springs, Darley, Hillendale, Pin Oak, and many others. The only stallion auction where you could receive up to $15,000. December 7th to the 16th. Visit iowathoroughbred.com.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Multiple Grade 1 winning millionaire, World of Trouble.
World of Trouble and Manny Franco win the Jiper.
World of Trouble takes the Carter.
One of the fastest horses of his generation, the son of Cantharos captured both the Grade 1 Carter on dirt and Grade 1 Jiper on turf this year, and would go on to record 100-plus buyer speed figures in his last seven starts, including a 118 buyer as a three-year-old, the highest three-year-old buyer speed figure of 2018. World of Trouble, standing at Hillendale.
I'm three-time Derby winning jockey Gary Stevens.
This is Rosie Napravnik.
Hi, my name is Sean Bridgman.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia, and I'm listening to Horse Racing Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
What a storybook ending to the Breeders' Cup turf for Bricks and Mortar, a horse that had been through so much in his career, has climbed back to the top of the mountain. He is going to go undefeated here in 2019, and he caps it off with a thrilling stretch run to run down the Ultra Game United, get to the wire first here in the Breeders' Cup turf.
There's your horse of the year. Case closed. There'll be debate. There'll be discussion, as there should be, but he is your horse of the year. They call this Racing's Championship Day for a reason. And when you suffer a loss on this day, on the one hand, as we saw with Midnight Bizou, valiant in defeat as she was, and then the next race, here comes Bricks and Mortar. He steps up to the plate, a huge stretch run, mows down the field, coming down the stretch. He closes the season with a perfect record. If Bricks and Mortar is not Horse of the Year, there's something bad wrong with the voting process.
Well, that's the way it sounded on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Our coverage of the Breeders' Cup turf, our full coverage of the Breeders' Cup, every Breeders' Cup race last Friday and Saturday. That was Kurt Becker joining me on the coverage and stating his case, no bones about it. For him, Bricks and Mortar with that powerhouse win in the Breeders' Cup turf, proving that he deserves to be Horse of the Year here in 2019. And first of all, welcome back to the Equine Forum presented by Red Brand Fence. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. But, you know, that was a lot of the talk, and one of the big storylines going into the Breeders' Cup this year was, okay, we didn't have that dominant older horse on dirt in the Breeders' Cup Classic, although McKenzie had been good, Vino Rosso had been good, but not great, not spectacular, not dominating. So was it going to be Bricks and Mortar, or was it going to be Midnight Bisou to assert themselves and prove that they are the horse that should be Horse of the Year? Some people even said Mitoli, and that's still one of the horses people are talking about. Mitoli needs to be in the discussion. I'm not as big on that argument. I don't feel like Mitoli is a Horse of the Year candidate, considering the fact that, yeah, he did win at a mile, but he didn't win past a mile. I think you have to do more than that if you want to be Horse of the Year. But in a wide open year like this, without a dominant, older, dirt horse, Bricks and mortar. The questions were, okay, he's undefeated. He was 5-for-5 coming into the Breeders' Cup. He's now 6-for-6. All of his wins in greatest stakes company, and all of them on turf. Is that going to be enough to get him over the hump? Well, his job became a lot easier in terms of his Horse of the Year credentials when Midnight Bisou came up short behind Blue Prize in the Breeders' Cup Distaff the race before. And you just heard Kurt mention that. The Breeders' Cup is considered racing's championship days. And as much as you can cement your case for a championship on those days, you can lose it too. And I think Midnight Bisou did that. If she had won, we're having a wonderful debate. Bricks and Mortar, Midnight Bisou. Now I think it's Bricks and Mortar and everybody else when it comes to the Horse of the Year debate. Trainer Chad Brown is with me now. He, of course, trains Bricks and Mortar. He saddled 3 Breeders' Cup winners over the course of the 2 days. Wonderful Breeders' Cup for him. And Chad, nice enough to spend a few minutes on what has to be a busy morning for him. Chad, thanks for the time, my friend.
Well, thanks for having me.
So what do you think? Bricks and Mortar, slam dunk, Horse of the Year?
You know, I hope so. I think, he's had a really outstanding season. He couldn't have done any better. And it seems like he's been the leader all year. And I don't think Kyle Victory would move him down at all. Certainly there's some other horses that have fantastic seasons as well, with Tolly and Midnight Bisou for sure. So, I'm optimistic that he'll be rewarded with a Horse of the Year that I think he deserves.
I said earlier in the show that performance in the Breeders' Cup Turf was probably the signature performance of the 2019 Breeders' Cup. It was that good. How about for you, sitting there watching it, how good was that effort by Bricks and Mortar?
I thought it was outstanding. You know, what a way for him to go out with his best race of his life. certainly his trip didn't make it easy. You could see he was a little rank at different parts, and he was kind of held up inside, and nobody gave him anything in that race, and he's still able to overcome it and get up going as far as he's ever gone before. He had to start a season off really last year in December, his first race back from a long layoff, going a mile and ending it at a mile and a half. I mean, it just takes a really, really rare racehorse to do that.
After you decided to go in the Breeders' Cup Turf, there were plenty of people out there that said, wait a minute, maybe the mile's a better fit for Bricks and Mortar, but nobody knows Bricks and Mortar the way you know him. You decide to go in the Turf, proves to be the right decision. We'll get to the mile in a minute, but talk about that decision to run him in the Turf over another spot.
You know, just observing the horse, like you say, knowing him real well, and, taking the feedback that he's giving me himself and applying it to the decision. You know, he's relaxing in his works well, and he can be a little headstrong, as you saw during the race, but in his works he was settled nicely, would gallop out with a lot of energy. And the more I got looking at the replays of his races and how much the horse has evolved through the year, I just figured to go out further would be better than trying to cut him back into a sharp mile, and thankfully it worked out.
Do you become almost like a proud parent when you see a horse like Bricks and Mortar, who has overcome so much in his career? He missed almost all of 2018 and then comes back here in 2019 and puts in this kind of season. Are you almost sitting back like a proud parent right now, Chad?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a lot of work goes into it, and there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of team members that participated in this happening. And, you know, without all their efforts, we wouldn't be here. And, of course, you have to have the horse. So, it's just one of those stories that everything came together, you know, and everyone did their job, including the horse, and I couldn't be more proud of the whole team.
I thought the Breeders' Cup Mile was maybe the most, well, they're all contentious, but that was a wide-open race. You had so many good horses in there, and Uni comes bursting through and runs away from that field. Tell me how good that effort was.
Outstanding. I've said it several times now, I don't believe I've ever trained a horse with as strong a turn of foot and closing kick as Uni. In fact, I know it. And for her to run as well as she did, coming off a career-best race in the First Lady at Keeneland, and then worrying about her bouncing off the race, and actually she ran faster again on short rest and all the shipping and everything, she's just a remarkable horse. One of the best I've had. And like I said, definitely the biggest turn of foot.
Yeah, she had to be supplemented to the mile, too, so that the conviction that you and the connection showed in this filly was pretty remarkable.
It was a no-brainer. You know, one night I wasn't even aware till we mentioned the Breeders' Cup she had to be supplemented, and the discussion I had with the owners was a very short one.
It's always nice when it goes like that. And I say filly, but she's a five-year-old mare, and boy, really proved that she was best. And, you know, the ladies have had a lot of success in that race, Chad. They've now won 10 renewals of the Breeders' Cup Mile. Why is that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not sure. It's the first time that we've ever won the race. So, you know, I participated in it a couple times here and there. But, you know, I'm not really sure what the reason is for that. But, you know, knowing that moving forward, we won't be afraid to try another filly in the race in the future.
Yeah, I was shocked to learn as I was getting ready for this, well, getting ready for the coverage as we were hosting the radio broadcast of the races last weekend, that you saddled your first winner in the juvenile turf, in the mile, and in the turf. That was the first win for you in all three of those races. I was shocked by that.
Yeah, it felt good, I'll tell you, to win some races that we hadn't won before. Was extra special for us.
I told people you're just showing off.
No, we're trying to hit the cycle. If we can hit all the races,
which ones are
more work to do?
Which ones are still missing? Do you know off the top of your head?
There's a lot of dirt races still missing. I think we've won all the turf races. So it's really just some of the dirt races. A lot of them actually.
Tell me about Structor and the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf.
No, he ran great. He's been coming in the race super. I was really excited after his last work and optimistic that he'd run really well, and he did. Got a great ride from Jose Ortiz as well.
Yeah, just tremendous. Is he a horse that you could see maybe trying the dirt at some point, or do you keep him on turf?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he trains good on it. You know, we debuted him initially on the grass because he could handle it. We worked him on the turf one time just to make sure. But the distance of the race was real. I was interested in. He's, you know, he needs to go two turns, this horse. I just can't see him running one turn. He wouldn't be effective. So, you know, you get up to Saratoga getting ready to debut one, your options are on the dirt are really just to start him sprinting. And I just didn't think it'd serve him well doing it. So we started him on the grass, and it's worked out.
Talking with trainer Chad Brown here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Chad, when you think about all the success that you've had, and there's been plenty, what do you attribute it to? Is it a mindset? Is it a program? What is it?
It's a combination between having the right coworkers, team. I mean, they have so many talented men and women. I know I keep saying it, but it's true. They're just really the best in the business. And you know, I've learned so much training horses from Bobby Frankel and such and Shug. And I can draw a bunch of plans that are supposed to work, but unless you have the right team to execute them and then have the right horses to apply them to, you just can't get here. And we've found ourselves in, you know, last few years of having the perfect situation with all the right talent around the horses, the right horses themselves, and being able, you know, to make the right decisions from the top. So, you know, that's really what it takes to show up on the biggest stage and do well.
Yeah, it's great to have the players, but you have to be able to handle those good horses when you do get them, right?
Absolutely. You know, it takes, you know, and you gain experience. You know, we don't always make every right decision, but it seems like the longer we do this, you know, you learn as you go along. And something Bobby always taught me is you got to keep adapting to what's going on and learn both positive and negative of what happened and try to apply it. And, you know, it's a competitive game, and there's a lot of smart trainers out there, and there's a lot of good horses to run against, and you know, there's a lot of great owners, and there's just, you know, you just sort of have to work with what you have, and just keep moving forward and trying to make the right decisions. And I think the key is really just learning all the way along. You can't ever stop learning.
Well, and you're at the top of the mountain now. There's no doubt about it. The leading trainer in North America, anyways, for sure. That question always comes up. Is it more difficult, more challenging to get to the top of the mountain or to stay there when you're there? So which one is it?
That's a tough question. Yeah. You know, I'd answer it right now is to stay because, you know, there's so much competition out there. And right now, it's, you know, it's so fortunate. Things are going great. But the reality is, you know, when you look at the situation now, you got a horse like Bricks and Mortar that's gone. And there's some uncertainty with a couple other horses, if they're going to train on or not or run next year, like Sister Charlie Uni, we're going to see. You know, right now it looks like there's a chance they could run at six. But sooner or later, you know, these horses are they're going to be retired. It's a lot like coaching, you know, Division I sports at the highest level. You know you're going to have your players normally between 1 and 4 years, and you have to go recruit, and you have to have new ones, and you have to stay up with the style of the game, and there's always competition. So, you know, as these players graduate on, you have to hope that you have your recruiting's good and you have new ones coming in, and, you know, just, you know, have the right staff around them. And so I think it's a lot like that. That's the way I approach it, and hopefully we can keep it going.
Yeah, other than sweeping those dirt races at the Breeders' Cup, what other things are on the Chad Brown list of goals or the Chad Brown bucket list that you want to accomplish?
Well, you know, right up there at the top is, you know, the Kentucky Derby and the Travers. Those are two races we haven't won that I just hold in such high regard. And, you know, been close in the Derby with a second with Good Magic, you know, to justify. And that was it's the closest we've finished, and I thought we had a really good chance to win. We had a good taste of it there, turning for home. And so that's a race we're really trying to get to. And, you know, of course, the Travers being my hometown, yeah, that'd be fantastic to win. And so those are goals of ours.
Well, Chad, all the best moving forward. I know you're a busy man, so really appreciate it whenever you can give us a little bit of time here. Thank you so much, and good luck moving forward. Congrats on all the success at the Breeders' Cup.
Thanks for having me, and it's terrific coverage all Breeders' Cup week for sure.
Thanks, Chad. Chad Brown here on HRRN. Like all of our guests, we're going to send him a gift, courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Don't forget to head over to EmbraceTheRace.com and pick out your favorite gear. You can do that, EmbraceTheRace.com, and wear what you love, Embrace the Race. Yeah, wow, Chad Brown. Some cool things there from Chad. You're talking about what he's picked up from Bobby, what he's learned from being around Shug McGahee, two of the greatest that have ever walked the shed row. And to hear him say that he wants to, you know, hit the cycle. They're trying to sweep all the breeders. Hey, why not? But the Derby, the Travers, those are two big ones still lacking from that, what is going to be a Hall of Fame resume someday. But those are ones that Chad wants to get, and that's, you know, everybody needs something to motivate him. Those are motivating trainer Chad Brown. And I'm sure he gets motivated when he walks down the shed row and sees all those grade one winners too. My thanks to Chad for taking a few minutes here this morning. When I come back, Graham Motion looks back on his victory in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf. This is the Equine Forum on HRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Racing at Mahoning Valley is off and running with racing 4 days a week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday, plus a special Friday card on November 29th after Thanksgiving. Monday, November 25th is highlighted by the $250,000 Steel Valley Sprint for three-year-olds at six furlongs and the $75,000 Hollywood Gaming Mahoning Valley Distaff. Post time 12:45 p.m. Learn more at HollywoodMahoningValley.com.
Castleton Lions is proud to introduce precocious multiple Great Estates winner Protonico for the 2019 breeding season. A Son of Giants Causeway out of an AP Indy mare, Protonico rolled to a 12 3/4 length victory in his debut as a 2-year-old before taking the Grade 3 Smarty Jones and Grade 3 Discovery Handicap at 3, followed by an ultra game win in the Grade 2 Ali Sheba at Churchill Downs in his 4-year-old season. Protonico joins the Castleton Lions stallion roster that includes multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti and Blue Blood sprinter Justin Phillip. Gio Ponti is the sire of Eclipse champion Dre Fong, Canadian Classic winner Sir Dudley Diggs, and stakes winners Miss Technicality and America's Tale. While Justin Phillip is represented by exciting stakes-winning filly Safe to Say and stakes place runners Justaholic, Blushing Justine, and Upset Brewing. Protonico, Gio Ponti, and Justin Phillip standing at Castleton Lions.
Get Get ready for the Thanksgiving holiday with the Racing Feast, Wednesday, November 27th, featuring the $1 million Land of Enchantment Day at Zia Park with seven stakes races, headlined by the $250,000 Zia Park Derby and the $250,000 Zia Park Oaks. Free nominations for all the Land of Enchantment Day stakes close November 15th. For more information, call 575-492-7086 or go to ZiaParkCasino.com.
Adina Springs is home to two of the most exciting young stallions in Kentucky, Point of Entry and Mucho Macho Man. A five-time Grade 1 winner, Point of Entry is the number one third crop sire by A Runner Index. In 2019 alone, the heir to Dynaformer's legacy is the sire of UAE Derby winner Puska Parfait, Breeders' Cup Mile contender Admission Office, and Graded Place two-year-old Tuggle. Breeders' Cup Classic champion Mucho Macho Man is the leading second crop sire by Black Type Wins, led by Del Mar Grade 2 winner Mucho Unusual, and the incredibly tough and consistent Mucho Gusto, who has more lifetime graded wins or placings than any three-year-old in his crop. Point of Entry and Mucho Macho Man are the latest stallions to carry on the classic bloodlines and classic performance tradition at Adina Springs. Call Ken Wilkins or Donald Wells today about 2020 seasons and visit adinastallions.com.
Hi, this is Steve Buttleman, the official bugler at Churchill Downs in the Kentucky Derby, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Albina is last as they come to the top of the stretch. Sweet Melania grabs the lead on the outside as they turn for home. Abscond is second on the rails, sharing is third. Then Daye selflessly on the far outside. Sweet Melania to catch. Sharing confronts her. A 16th to go. Sharing takes the lead. Leitman from Daye. Back to third is Sweet Melania. Sharing and Manny Franco have won. Daye was second. Sweet Melania was third. Albina came from last. She finished fourth in 134.59.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Larry Colmus had the call of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf, and nobody better than Sharing, 10 years after her mother won the Filly and Mare Turf for trainer Graham Motion. He's back in the winner's circle with her daughter, the ultra-talented Sharing, and Graham is with me now here on HRRN. Graham, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Mike.
How's that for a little trip down memory lane?
Sounded pretty good to me.
How'd it look as you were watching her cross the finish line?
You know, I felt pretty confident when we got to the 16th pole on Saturday that she, you know, she had enough horse. I guess at that point I was just worried about the closes, but I'm actually not sure I've won a Breeders' Cup before as comfortably as that.
Yeah, it was a relatively easy win, if you want to look at it like that, if we can even say that about a Breeders' Cup race. But how cool is it for you to come back with the daughter of Shared Account and win a Breeders' Cup race?
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. I mean, a lot's been made of it, but Shared Account was pretty special to us in general here at Herringswell. I mean, everybody was very fond of her. She was just a really kind mare to be around and a very generous mare on the racetrack.
Any similarities between the two?
I mean, I would say that in their disposition. I mean, Sharing is always handled things very well. She's very classy to be around, a very kind filly. And she appears to be equally as generous in the afternoon.
The thing that gets me when you look at her past performances, Graham, and you know this better than anybody, but she debuts on grass, gets beat a neck, and then comes back in an off-the-turf race, sprinting at Saratoga and wins. And then stretches out and wins going long on the grass, and now a Breeders' Cup winner on the turf. She's extremely versatile.
She really is, and I would imagine down the road she's going to handle going a little further. I think she has a little quicker turn of foot perhaps than her mother did, which might mean that these sort of mile 16th, mile and 8th races might suit her better, but I don't think she has many limitations at this point.
Yeah, you have to be proud that she's a Maryland bred too.
Well, definitely. You know, and interesting enough, had I started her in Maryland, I probably would have started her on the dirt because she does handle the dirt pretty well in the morning. But with the pedigree that she has, Aaron and I always felt that the grass was where we were going to be, especially if we got it to the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, Aaron Wellman, Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners and Gainsway Stable, the owners. Michael Herner from Gainsway had sent me an email early in the week, and he said he thought that Shearing was going to run a big race. Why do you think he had that kind of confidence?
I think he knew how much we liked her, and I think she a little bit became the wise guy's horse leading up to the Breeders' Cup. I think it was intimidating to see the European form on some of these horses. I thought there were a couple of really legitimate group one horses in there. But I think Michael knew how much confidence we had in her.
What was it like receiving the, I guess you didn't receive it necessarily, but you were there when Joe Torre made the trophy presentation?
Yeah, I actually made a point of introducing myself to Joe Torre after the presentation, because I've never met him, and he's a guy, you know, obviously you admire a lot. I think as trainers, we follow coaches, you know, because what we do is very similar to them. So he's a guy I have tremendous respect for, and I made a point of shaking his hand afterwards.
You know, you're the second trainer in two segments now that's used that same kind of analogy of being somewhat of a coach or a manager when it comes to working with these horses. Chad Brown was with me in the last segment, and he said the same thing. It really is like that, isn't it?
Well, I think it is. I mean, you know, we manage players. They just happen to be equine players. But yes, I mean, I think what we do, you know, I started off a little bit of a relationship with Andy Reid after Animal Kingdom won the Kentucky Derby. He came out here to Fair Hill a couple of times and was just fascinated in the similarities to what we do as to what he does coaching football teams. And I think we kind of perhaps, you know, we have an understanding of what coaches do and vice versa, and I think it's an interesting dynamic.
Talk about Manny Franco for a minute and the ride that he gave Shearing. I think we referenced it on the coverage. It was flawless.
You know, it was, and it's funny. I've been talking to somebody else this morning about the Breeders' Cup and about shared accounts, and I, you know, when I look back at my other Breeders' Cup wins, I think there's one common denominator in that they all had spectacular rides, and I think on that day, at that level of competition, that's what it takes to get you to the winner's circle, and Manny was a perfect example. We a little bit called an audible before the race. I had happened to watch the two-year-old Colts race earlier on the grass, and I just saw a couple of horses have really tough trips. And I said to Manny, before we went in the paddock, I said, we just can't afford to have that kind of a trip today because the horses are – it's such a high level of competition. You can't afford to get in trouble because you're not going to win if you do. And so we decided to ride her a little bit more aggressively perhaps than we might have done. But what a great job he did. He got her to settle beautifully down the backside, and he has a lot of confidence in her. He's very high on the filly.
Where does she go from here, Graham?
I think we'll back off her a little bit, give her a little bit of a break here, possibly point for a race like the Tampa Oaks in March, which gives her, you know, enough time to kind of get over this and let her grow up a little bit and have her fresh for next year.
Is she a big filly?
You know, she is not a big filly, but I have a feeling she's got a lot of growing to do. Her mom was big, and she's grown a lot since Saratoga. I can't believe how much, actually, she's changed physically since Saratoga.
This may sound like a very novice question, but as somebody who has never trained a horse, if you're looking to make a transition, well, let's say you're going to keep her on the grass or you go to the dirt, whatever you do, if she grows and she matures and she becomes bigger, does that aid you in any way to maybe making a transition to the dirt with her if you decided to?
I don't think so necessarily, but okay. I think it's important for these two-year-olds, you know, to keep developing rather than just being a precocious two-year-old. You know, I think very often we don't see these two-year-olds train on because they physically were advanced as two-year-olds and then everybody else catches up with them as three-year-olds. So I think she's a filly that has got a lot of growing to do. I think physically she's going to be able to compete with three-year-olds for that reason because she does have that much growing to do.
Visiting with trainer Graham Motion here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Graham, after the Breeders' Cup, you sent out a beautifully worded tweet regarding the situation with Mongolian Groom and the protocols that were in place throughout the week at Santa Anita, and I couldn't have agreed more. I saw more officials, more veterinarians, more people looking at horses consistently, and you were on the front lines. You saw it with your horse. Explain to people how well cared for those horses were throughout the week at Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, I mean, the vet inspections were extremely thorough. We arrived on Sunday night from Fairhill in Maryland. We flew out FedEx on Sunday. And before we even set foot on the track with the racehorses on Monday morning, they had a thorough examination by the veterinarians. And I believe there was two vets each time they inspected a horse. There were two of them that carried out those inspections. And then they came back at least twice more before each horse ran. And they monitored them on the racetrack. And that's not even including the blood work that we did 6 weeks out and once we arrived. So I applaud the Breeders' Cup and Santa Anita for the way they handled things. I'm not sure that anything could have been done differently. And unfortunately, it's not a perfect world, like I said in my tweet. And horses, just like athletes, are going to suffer injuries. And horses just don't handle these injuries the way humans do. Their bodies, their physiques are just not made to handle them. And it was devastating to see a horse get hurt on Saturday. But unfortunately, it's life. It's something we just have to come to terms with. And believe me, we don't take it easily when these things happen. I've had it happen to me, and it's absolutely devastating. I feel a tremendous responsibility to the horse and the jockey when I send a horse out to the racetrack. And when things go wrong, it wears on you for a long time because you have to shoulder that responsibility. And I felt terrible for the connections. And really for everybody, it was just such a gut punch to have that happen on Saturday of all days.
Yeah, I agree. We were about 16 seconds away from a flawless Breeders' Cup, and you know, nobody's happy about what happened by any stretch of the imagination. And I feel a responsibility as somebody who has a voice nationally and internationally to the racing world and to even people that aren't involved in racing to let people know about the good things that are going on in the sport to, you know, to make the sport safer, not only for the humans, but for certainly for the equines. And that's why I loved your tweet so much and the way you worded things. I thought it was simply beautiful. And people can go back to your Twitter account and read that from November 3rd. I thought it was very well said. But one question for you, Grant. This is a sport that has taken you all over the world, and you've been very privileged to have so many good horses. Have you seen protocols in place in other places that would rival what you saw at Santa Anita, or was it that much better than anything you've ever seen?
I think what we saw this last week at Santa Anita was beyond anything we've seen before.
Wow.
It really took it to the next level. And, you know, having that many horses in a confined space made that possible. You know, and what my point of my tweet was that, look, we had an accident on Saturday, and it's devastating to everybody involved. And I'm sure the vets took it the worst of all because they felt responsibility for checking the horses and sending them out to the track. But it just goes to show that, you know, we can do this, and we've got to keep improving and keep making things better for our sport. In this day and age, there's less and less margin for error. And we owe it to these horses to do the best we can. And I think we're making huge steps in that direction. I think we've come a long way in the last 20, 30 years, whether it's trying to predict these injuries and trying to rehouse the horses after they have injuries. I think in every aspect of the sport, we've come a tremendous way in the last few years.
Is it possible, Graham, for the protocols that were in place at Santa Anita to be implemented at every racetrack across the country?
I don't know if it's possible at that level, because that was some very intense scrutiny, and it was actually, you know, somewhat intimidating, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but it was, you know, it was very intense last week, and I think we definitely can rise to a certain level. Whether we can get to that level intensity, you know, 365 days a year, I'm not sure at every track. But certainly we still can make progress and do more and get closer to that.
Yeah, the last line of your tweet said, "It will never be perfect, but we came darn close this weekend at Santa Anita." And from what I saw as an observer from the outside looking in on the media side of things, it certainly appeared to be the case.
Yeah, I remember, you know, watching the horses go down to the start on Saturday for the Classic, and I just was reflecting. It was maybe emotional is a strong word, but it was very, it was a very special weekend, and it was such a, as you know, Santa Anita is such an amazing setting, and the sky was turning that spectacular color behind the mountains, and, you know, when you reflected on some of the results we'd had that day, and to see these amazing horses going down to the gate after such a spectacular weekend, it just made it all the harder to see a horse get hurt. But that is reality. We don't live in a fairy tale world. Horses get hurt, humans get hurt. It's just part of what we do and competing at the level that we compete at.
Well, Graham, on a positive note, congratulations on the big win at the Breeders' Cup, and all the best moving forward with not only sharing but with all the horses in your stable, and really appreciate the visit here this morning, my friend.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, Graham Motion here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Like all of our guests, he's going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. We'll get that to him, and I'll get to this final break so we can come back and wrap this one up for you. It's the Equine Forum on HRRN, your home for racing's biggest events.
Airdrie Stud is proud to announce the arrival of Grade 1 winning millionaire Preservationist. The exceptionally talented son of Arch boasts Foundation mares Courtly D and Manad on the top and bottom of his blue-blooded pedigree. On the racetrack, he was one of 2019's best, taking the Grade 1 Woodward at Saratoga and Historic Suburban at Belmont Park.
And Preservationist has won the Suburban by 4.5 lengths over Catholic Boy and Pebble.
Preservationist, another exciting addition to the Airdrie Stud Stallion roster. Think about it.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere, or visit centralequipment.com.
Shadwell Farm, home to world-class stallions, presents two young stars. Mo Heyman, undefeated two-year-old, multiple graded stakes winner at 2 and 3, a dazzling son of Tapping, winner of his first 5 career starts, 4 in graded stakes. Grade 1 winner, Tamer Coos, winner of the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. This son of Spitestown was a top international miler that earned over $1.8 million. Shadwell Farm, building speed for the future.
Mark your calendar for the Holiday Racing Festival at Penn National on Wednesday, November 27th. The card features 3 outstanding stakes races, the $200,000 Fabulous Strike Stakes, the $100,000 Swatara Stakes, and the $100,000 Blue Mountain Futurity. Plus, there's a special $3,500 holiday cash giveaway. First post is 6 p.m. Eastern, with the stakes included in the early pick 4, comprised of races 1 through 4. Go to hcpn.com for details and rules.
Power. Taprit is still there. Masterplan is gaining. Masterplan at Taprit. Taprit still in front. Masterplan too late. Taprit will do it.
Passion.
It's Taprit. He makes another step forward on his way to Churchill. Well done, young man. We'll report home 4 lengths to the good.
Performance.
Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish Warcry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
Gainsway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling turned classic winner and millionaire. Following a precocious stakes-winning two-year-old campaign, Taprit set a new stakes record in the Grade 2 Tampa Bay Derby before capturing the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes in his three-year-old season. Among the best bred sons of Taprit ever to enter stud. Out of Grade 1 Spinaway Stakes winner and multiple graded stakes producer, Appealing Zophie. Taprit, standing for $12,500 at Gainsway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
This is Elliot Walden, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
My thanks to all of our guests who made this show possible this morning. Busy show. Kicked off with Ignacio Correas in the first half of the program, looking back on his distaff win with Blue Prize. Ed DeRosa talked a little derby and talked about the juvenile picture with me right around 8:35 Eastern. Vinny Viola was here to look back on that win in the Breeders' Cup Classic, and Chad Brown and Graham Motion helped round out the show in the second half of the program. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, all you have to do is just go over to our website. That's horseracingradio.net and check out the podcast. You can listen at your leisure. You can listen to all of our shows at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And don't forget to head over to americasbestracing.net to vote for HRN as your favorite radio show or podcast of 2019. If you like us, let them know. americasbestracing.net, the Fan Choice Award. Now for my producer, Lee Della Pina, for Chauncey handling all of our social media, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening, and go Steelers!